हरिः ॐ सहना भवतु सहनो भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadada Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Okay. That is because both the Supreme Personality of Godhead is eternally liberated, as well as the conditioned soul within the body. I shall now speak to you about their different characteristics. By chance, two birds have made a nest together in the same tree. The two birds are friends and are of a similar nature. One of them, however, is eating the fruits of the tree, while as the other, who does not eat the fruits, is in a superior position due to his potency. The bird who does not eat the fruits of the tree is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who, by his omniscience, perfectly understands his own position and that of the conditioned living entity, represented by the eating bird. That living entity, on the other hand, does not understand himself or the Lord. He is covered by ignorance and is thus called eternally conditioned, whereas the Personality of Godhead, being full of perfect knowledge, is eternally liberated. One who is enlightened in self-realization, although living within the material body, sees himself as transcendental to the body, just as one who has arisen from a dream gives up identification with the dream body. A foolish person, however, although not identical with his material body, but transcendental to it, thinks himself to be situated in the body, just as one who is dreaming sees himself as situated in an imaginary body. An enlightened person who is free from the contamination of material desire does not consider himself to be the performer of bodily activities. Rather, he knows that in all such activities it is only the senses, born of the modes of nature, that are contacting sense objects born of the same modes of nature. Right, so then one has this understanding, one has this knowledge. Right? So then this knowledge being there, then one can see the difference, so he doesn't identify with the body. But how we see that this not identifying with the body actually is, realized is that he does not consider himself the performer of the bodily activities. He understands the senses that are doing it. Right? The senses are coming from the modes of nature, and so the senses are contacting the sense objects coming from the same nature. Right? So those are interacting. Right? So he's just an instrument, but the instrument is not in what's getting done, because that's the material cause is carrying it out. Right? The material nature through the modes is carrying out the engagement of the sense and the sense objects, or how expertly they're applied, how good the result is. That's all the modes of nature. What the element that's being introduced by the living entity is the consciousness of whether it's done in connection with the Lord or not. Right? That's what we're adding. Because we're consciousness, so that's what we can add, right? You can only add something that you have, right? Right, sugar is sweet, so it can add sweetness to a preparation. It's not that the whole preparation, you know, like, let us say we have a sweet preparation, right? But we call it a sweet because it's prominent. But it's made up of all kinds of other things other than sweet, right? In fact, probably the volume of it is not sweet. You know what I'm saying? You're using flour or milk or all kinds of other things. That's the volume. There's some suite, but because that's the prominent, the important element, then therefore it's discussed in that way. So in the same way, the living entity is adding consciousness to the whole process. Therefore, then the living entity involvement is prominent. We'll say you're the doer, because you're, in other words, you're the doer in the way of that you're agreeing to attach yourself to the spiritual or attach yourself to the material. That's what you're doing. Right? But once you connect to one of those, then that nature itself carries out the mechanics. You know what I'm saying? Right? Because otherwise then we think, no, but I'm doing it. But the thing is you put the vegetable into the machine and it makes juice. You didn't actually make the juice. The machine made the juice. You just wanted to take part in that process. You understand? So that's the aspect. You know, and then the machine is actually not even doing it. It's the electricity that's actually doing it. Right? So the material nature is going through these, but it's actually the Lord's potency that makes the material nature work. Right? So that's what it is in touch. We use that to break down our attachment to it. But when you're actually using it in applying it in interaction and relationships, you don't worry about all those mechanics. Right? Because it's the consciousness, it's the particular purpose that is important. Right? Like somebody does something and the purpose is good, people will appreciate it. Someone else does the same thing but the purpose is bad, no one will appreciate it. Right? Does that make sense?
Yeah. Somehow that's where our misunderstanding comes from, because we don't think it's consciousness that is defined. We think it's the external.
Yes, it's the field, it's the activity. Because as we were discussing this morning, is that the field, by having the field, that means when we get the field, we become happy. But the field is just existing there. So technically, that static state is not what you know what I'm saying? But it's that you have the option to operate the field and therefore generate the result that you'll consider happiness. You know what I'm saying? You know, you go in and you look at the kitchen, everything's there, look in the fridge, it's full, then you feel happy. Right? But nothing's happened. What are you happy about? You're happy about the potential that if you did something, you would get something from it. You know what I'm saying? But we put so much on because we just take it for granted. Of course, it's whatever I want to do and whenever. But we don't understand that it's not the field that makes you happy. So because of that, then simply, you know, if you get this car, you'll be happy. If you get this clothes, you'll be happy. If you go on vacation to this place, then you'll be happy. Means, let's say you go to, how do you say, I can't even remember the names now, but, you go there. But people just live there. That's just where they live. And they're thinking, you know, to themselves, where are we going on vacation this year? You know, they don't say, hey, we'll just stay here, you know. No, to them, it's just normal.
And they don't go to the beach for years.
It's like it said that. It said, those who live by the Ganges bathe in a tube well. You know what I'm saying? Everybody here lives close enough to go bathe every day in the Ganga, but we don't, you know. Like if you go to a village that's next to a river, it's not necessarily right on the river. You know, so you walk a few minutes and take a bath in the river and come back. Right? So that's the, yeah. Okay, so is that clear? So the point is we think we're the doer. We know we're not the body, but we think we're the doer. So the first stage is understand we're not the body. The next stage is understand we're not the doer. Mm. You know, like that.
But we help to realize that we're not the body by getting knowledge that we're not the doer.
Yes, it means the devotional process is so perfect that if one comes and the other doesn't, it's just a matter of practicing one, the other will come. So whichever, there's a natural course, a logical course that generally works, but we find there's always the situation within ourselves or within others that there's something unique. So they'll start somewhere else. That advances quickly, but then something else comes out. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's just like the normal thing is you develop culture, and then from that, then you develop renunciation. Mm. You know, well, but so we develop renunciation, and then we're hoping later we'll develop some culture. Yeah, so, you know, it works, whatever. So that's the point.
You know. All right. Good morning. You're pointing out that by doing the duties, our duties will relate to Paramatma, so happiness comes.
Yes.
And it's when we contemplate the duties in a conditioned state, we think duties is the dry part, the part where we won't get anything else.
Yeah, yeah.
It's the opposite, right?
Yeah, no, it's the experience comes from performance of the duty. It's an abhideya that everything is happening, because the other one is you're thinking of the result I'll get, you know, the position you're in, but those are static still. It'll give something, but it's not as much as the activity itself. That's why the pastime's more important. Right? For the Lord, it's the interaction, but then it's not that I'm the enjoyer. You know, just like we give the example in the aropya, I mean, not aropya, aparoksha, way of gaining understanding. It's you're experiencing it, but you're not focusing on it. You know, it's just like, let's say, you're eating. You're just experiencing. But as soon as you stop and think, I'm really enjoying this, you're not enjoying it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm. That's like the sahajas, speaking so much about these. That means they're not really getting that experience.
No.
No,
because they're trying to say this by the speak. So what they're getting the experience is of speaking about how they're getting the experience. You know, so who can tell the better story, or you know, who's, you know, like that. You know, it's the same thing.
Right. And in the spiritual world, they don't have all those things. That the body is different from the soul.
Well, it's non-different. It's the same. It's just the manifestation of your mood. That's why it takes that form. Because here, it's our mood. I think, like you said, it probably says, the person, it's the soul who thinks it's the doctor. It's not the body thinks I'm the doctor.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? The body just exists there. So he thinks he's the doctor. Therefore, he's born into a situation where then he has that particular intelligence, that particular, you know, physical skill, he can be a doctor, right? Because it's like, you can have all the knowledge you want. You can be the most advanced in the medical science, you know, of anyone on the planet. But if your hand's not steady, you know, you can't be a neural brain surgeon. In other words, you know, if you're talking to your, you know, neural brain surgeon and his hands are going like this, then you should find a new one. Right? You understand? So the body is not the doctor, it's the soul, but because he desires that and he has the karma for it, therefore he's born into that family, that situation, and with those particular physical abilities that he's able to become a doctor. Does that make sense? So the same process is there because you have the mood of serving Krishna in that way. Therefore, that spiritual body manifests. You know, just like this material body manifests depending upon your mentality. There, your spiritual body manifests depending on the mentality. Does that make sense? So that's the whole. Yeah. All these things, as we're saying, the mechanics are the same. What's different is the consciousness.
So here we learn the tattva, and there we just, there was the moon.
Yeah, means because the point is whatever tattva is there, it's not that's important on its own. Here we emphasize the tattva is brought out as tattva, because then it removes it removes the element of rasa. You know what I'm saying? That's generally speaking why, you know, you see your intellectual appreciates tattva and others don't. Right, because they're used to gaining some taste from intellectual discussions, but at the same time, intellectuals aren't appreciative of Vedanta because it comes to a conclusion. Right, so even then they don't discuss Vedanta, you know. Or if they do, they just do it by bringing out some interesting points, but not wanting to come to a conclusion. But when you're dealing with the conclusion and you're dealing with the devotional element, the relationship with the Lord and that interaction, then it becomes attractive. You know what I'm saying? So it's because of its connection to Krishna, that's the attractive element, not because it's intellectual. Right? So then the devotees can appreciate it. Does that make sense? Yeah. So the when you deal with tattva, you're breaking it down into these elements that don't have any rasa. You know what I'm saying? When the body, we say the body is made out of earth, water, fire, air, and ether, it's not a whole lot happening, right? You know, or if we want to have more fun, then we look at it from the Ayurvedic perspective. It's made out of mucus, bile, and air. You know, it's kind of like, okay, yeah, you know. So it removes that. But in the spiritual world, you don't have to look at it that way. You're only looking at it in its connection to Krishna. So there are skills, there is knowledge, but that's not why you're doing anything. But here's, we do it because we know this is the right thing to do. Right? This is correct. It's purifying. It's elevating. It will establish our relationship with Krishna. So that's the inspiration, right? Until one comes to the platform of taste, then that will be more prominent, but the other aspects are there. But on this, once one comes to bhava, there's no need of dealing with this kind of knowledge as such. Then it's a matter of what is favorable or not favorable to the service to Krishna. Right? So they have that knowledge. It means they have subtlety of rasa, like you look at nectar devotion. Then it gives the sanchari bhavas. So then, just what it is, what they're doing with their body, how they're holding their head, or how they're holding the arm, or how they're different things, indicates the particular mood that they're in, what particular mood they're feeling. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like that. So it is. That is the science. It's called the science of devotion, but it's not based on that. The rule itself accomplishes this particular thing. The point is that Krishna is pleased, right? So this activity gets it. Just like here, we may be into the science of cooking, or it's Bengali cooking, and you know all those different things about the cooking and the way you make a chaunce, or the way you fry it, or the way you steam it, or like that. But there, it's just, if you end up with this preparation, Krishna likes it. So to do that, you have to have these elements put into place. You understand? So they have the knowledge. They're expert cooks. But it's just that it's not the knowledge that's inspiring. It's the result for Krishna that's inspiring. Does that make sense? You know, they know music. It means, you see, when Krishna and dressed up as a girl, right, you know, because Radharani is not talking to Krishna, right? So then, Kundalata's cousin, right? So then, being a cousin, then she's like a sister, right? But so she's friends with Krishna. But being a girl, then she's friends with the other gopis, right? So she has an in there, and Krishna's cousin now automatically is going to be, you know, part of the in crowd. Right, and like Subhadra is part of the in crowd because she's Krishna's sister, right? So after all said and done, then Draupadi's, you know, fine, because now she can get all the inside stories about Krishna that nobody else knows, that only she knows, because she's the sister. Right? You know, so then when she comes in, and that because in this case then she's a damsel that's come down from the heavenly planets, right? So then they start to say, okay, well, why don't you sing something for us, right? And so it's not just, hey, you know, sing us, you know, about the, you know, how you say, Camp Town ladies, sing this song. You know, it's not one of those kind of things, you know. You know, so it's going to be something more. So they're asking, sing this particular rag, right, which is a difficult raga, in this particular beat. That will be very difficult. And not only that, it's not sung in sa or ma grama, it's sung in ga grama. So that means what you're doing is you have 20, the Vedic scale is 22 notes, right? There's seven places, but each of those places can have four, three, or two. Yeah, four, three, or two places. Means there's four kinds of saws, depending on the quarter note, right? Four, there's three kinds of rays, two kinds of gauze. Then there's four kinds of bas, four kinds of pas, then three kinds of knees, and two kinds of ray. I mean, das, and then two kinds of ray. Knees, excuse me. It's been a while.
Oh, like that.
So it's 4-3-2, 4-4-3-2. That's sagarama. That's the main thing. But now when you shift that over, right, then that means there's four kinds of gauze, not two kinds of gauze. So that becomes more difficult. So then you shift this over, so you have these opiums. And so in the present day, no one knows gagrama. Everybody sings a sagrama. And some know about the ma, you hear about it, but I don't know if anybody ever uses it. They say gagrama has gone back to the heavenly planets, because ga for Gandharva, so it's gone back to the Gandharvas. That's what they say. You know, it just means that they didn't pay attention, and over the generations it got lost, that's all. So the point is there, it's very difficult. So then what do? They ask her to sing, because she's from the heavenly planets, so they can sing. So they ask you, please sing this. Right? So it's not that the knowledge, they know all these different things, but it's only important because of its connection to Krishna. Does that make sense? So the point is, it's not that they all sit around there just in ecstasy and no one knows what's going on. Like that. So when they are in that state, then Yogamaya takes care. Like when the gopis, Krishna plays a flute and they dress up. They just, you know, they go to sit down and arrange themselves. And, you know, you do stuff. Things are put on the ankle, you know, things are put on the eyes, things are put around their waist. But they're so absorbed in Krishna, you know, instead of tying their ankle bell around, they tie their dupatta around their ankle. You know, and they only do one eye, but when you go to do the other one, they've already forgotten about it. And all these things. So they go off like that to see Krishna. Right? So it's a pretty amazing, you know, group. Right? But they don't notice. But Krishna is able to appreciate that. But then after he's appreciated that, then Yoga Maya arranges everything so that it all works out. And they don't look like that. Right? Yes.
Somebody should do a painting like that.
Yeah, could work.
That would make an interesting painting.
Yeah, it would make. Yeah. So... Does that make sense? So it's a combination of these things. You know the skill, but only because then you can do that nice, you can be a better instrument in the process. You know, so therefore, we see, like amongst the gopis, there are those who are expert, it means have a knowledge of a particular subject or an art, those who are expert in the art, and those who are masters in the art. Right? So Radharani's master in all 64. And the others then, depending, you know, somebody's master in Madanga, someone else is just, you know, knows Madanga. Right? So then they don't teach it, but they'll take part. And the ones who are masters teach it. And the ones who are expert, then they're the ones that if there's something really more, then they're the ones that you choose. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like, let's say, yeah, that makes sense. Okay.
So
Yoga Maya
actually helps the gopis get
dressed
properly for Krishna.
No, it's just she works it out.
What does that mean?
Well, Krishna is the supreme mystic, right? So mysticism is his energy.
Yes.
So then Yoga Maya will be the full form of that mystical energy. So she arranges it. But that's not what's important. It's just that the focus is on Krishna, and so it ends up. Because that's how they wanted to look, but that's not how they do look. You know, out of their enthusiasm to Krishna, they weren't able to, that impatience, they were unable to actually finish, right? Because it's just like, the gopi wants to go see Krishna, right? So how does she want to look? She wants to look okay, or she wants to look as good as it can get, right? Okay, now, let us take, just to, you know, put the two in comparison. Now, let us say the girl on her wedding day, how does she want to look at the wedding? Okay, or as good as it gets? Okay, so how often does a wedding start on time? Not so much. And how many hours, before did they start getting dressed? Yeah, I'm saying some 5-6 hours before. Those in the know start about 5-6 hours before. Those who are not so experienced start 2 or 3. Right? You know what I'm saying? Because you get it down, and then, oh, you want to change this, you change it. You know, it's like you've already worked out what you look like, but you probably changed it so many times, and this, that, and this could go here. Well, maybe that, you know, like that. So basically, it's only because the time has run out that they come out. Otherwise, it's rare I've ever heard of. The bride is ready and just waiting. I'm not sure if I've ever... I think I have in one case, but this is someone who was very, you know, like that. So, you know, like that. Okay, so does that make sense? So in other words, the time it would take to look as good as they want, you know, it's not going to happen. So how good it gets, you know, by, you know, what it may be like, you know, a few minutes or 30 seconds, you know, like that's how much time they actually apply. So that means the distance difference between that is what Yoga Maya makes up, because that's their intent. You know, that's the whole point, is the intent. You know, like the small child wants to do something, so the what they're actually doing, but what they intend to do is very different. Right? You know, the more the difference in the child, the more cute it is, right? You know, but... in this case, you know, the Mahamaya makes up the difference. You know, so therefore, everyone's satisfied, you know, because they're so, you know, attracted or by the child. Does that make sense? But you know, so in the spiritual world, Mahamaya is doing the same thing. I mean, excuse me, Yogamaya is doing the same thing. Yes. Okay. Okay. So does that make sense? So this is Vedanta. This is the summary of Vedanta, right? So in other words, that the Lord and the living entities, the material energy, are different, but at the same time there's, you know, a commonality, right? So the Lord and the living entity, they're both Purusha, right, controllers. But the Lord is the supreme, the Jiva is the minor. And the Jiva and the material energy are energy, Prakriti. But the Jiva is superior, the material energy is inferior, right? But Lord is the controller, controls the material energy, right, as Paramatma, and she controls this world through the modes of nature. So if someone is materially inclined, then they'll be under those modes. They're not. They're focused on the Lord. They'll be transcendental to those modes, right? And so then the example is given of two birds in the tree, right? So one is trying to enjoy, one is not. So as soon as the one who is gives that up and turns to the other friend, then it works. Then they become liberated. Though situated in the body, just like the Lord is in the body and he's not trying to enjoy it, so the Jiva can be situated in the body and not trying to enjoy it. Does that make sense?
But this principle is in every Vedic literature.
This is in every Vedic literature. It's just Vedanta just gets to this and it cuts out all the other elements. Okay. Like that. Yes.
If someone questions, you know, it makes some reference to God as male, you know, gender. And then it surprised me, an Indian in Puri, he questions that, you know, why does God have to be male? How would you?
Well, why can't he be?
No, right.
That's the whole point. It's just, why can't he be? Right. No, but what if he could be? So, well, so what? But why can't he be the other also? Right. Just, you know, it's just, in other words, how much you can take it this way, you can take it that way. Mm-hmm. You know, because the point is, no, you know, it has to be female. So it's like that. But then if you say he's female, then someone's going to say, but he could be male. You know, it's just mental speculation. That's all. It's just. The enjoyment of, and the person may think that that's their uniqueness. Everybody else says he's male. They say this individual says he's female. That makes them unique and special, which is a feminine trait. You know, the feminine trait is you want to be unique and special, right? So therefore, you know, like that.
But Purusha, Prakriti.
Yeah, but that's what it means. That's why the Vedic literature uses it. Because Purusha means it's a role. Who's in the active role? The Prakriti is who's in the feminine role. And then there's also who's dependent, who's not. So the Lord is independent. even if he wants to take a female form, he's still independent. Right? But like he comes as Mohini Murti, he's still independent. Like that. Because Mohini Murti is there, but Mohini Murti never thinks anybody in that assembly is attractive. Nobody gets Mohini Murti. Even Lord Shiva tries to catch Mohini Murti, he never catches. So that's the whole point, is the Lord is independent.
So you could say he can be female if he wants.
He can take that form, but the point is he is independent. Yeah, so even Lord Chaitanya, who's taking the feminine mood, but he's still dependent upon himself. Lord Chaitanya and the mood of Radharani is attracted to himself. So it's like Krishna and Dwarka when he wakes up in the morning and meditates upon himself. Like you're supposed to meditate upon the super soul. So he is the super soul, so he meditates upon himself. So he's still independent. That's the point. He's independent, we're not. So that's what the Vedanta is giving. That's the essential. So all Vedic literatures contain this knowledge. It's just that being able to discern that knowledge through the particular medium that knowledge is being expressed through. Right? Vedanta means you're only using you're using logic, basically, because it's called Nyaya Prasthan. It's logic. So the medium is logic, so logic is very direct, right? Very connected, like that. But because it has to actually mechanically fit. We're not talking rhetoric here, we're talking logic, right? Because rhetoric is whatever is the situation that the other person's in, you can play on that and get your point across even though it's not logical and win the argument, right? But logic means is that, you know, A equals B, B equals C, so A equals C. It's logical, right? So it's just a matter of seeing that you didn't make a mistake in this, right? Because sometimes they connect one way but not the other. They're like fire. Where there's smoke, there's fire. But where there's fire, there's not necessarily smoke. You know what I'm saying? Is that what it says? Okay. So that knowledge will be in all Vedic literature. It's just a matter of finding it. You know, just like Mahabharata, 100,000 verses, but only 25,000 are actually directly on the pastimes of the Pandavas. So that means, and Krishna is only involved with the Pandavas. So that means 75,000 verses are not connected. They're just things that are going on in the universe. Right, you know, according to the scriptures and things like that. So 25,000 is connected with the Pandavas. Now of that 25, how much is bringing out actually their relationship with Krishna and the devotion? Right. So that means within the Aparavidya, you're going to have a lot of, a lot of the medium that is being presented through will be more voluminous. Right? You know, you know, Bhagavatam says that, you know, the sadhu doesn't, you know, want anything from the Lord, you know, like that, you know, except maybe good health, because then he can render service. Mm-hmm. Right? So that's mentioned, the thing. It's just health. So that means there's a balance, you know, and they have to balance all these things. So all Ayurveda is talking about is how to produce health from balance. Mm-hmm. Right? But there's so many things to balance, so many considerations of balance, so that whole science becomes very big. So the connection that this health is only for rendering devotional service, someone might get lost or lose that thought in studying the Ayurveda. Does that make sense? So that's all that happens. So all these sages, when they're all the Smriti is just showing what's the purpose of the Shruti. Right? It's not giving something else. Right? It explains it. So, but it's explaining it practically how you'll apply it. You know, just like the sages understand, they have the knowledge of Varnashram, but they don't have the knowledge of how to connect that Varnashram to the Lord. That's Manasamhita. Right? But you're dealing with the great sages and in a general social environment. So the teachings are very big. But the exact same teachings are given by Narad Muni to Yudhishthira, because there it's devotee to devotee. So little things you don't have to get into. You more focus on the connection. So therefore, his explanation is much shorter. Right? And of it, of five chapters discussing Varnashram, we most likely only consider the first two actually to be Varnashram. The last three, you know, it's talking about the perfected being, the Paramahamsa, all these things. We won't connect to these rules. But no, that's the mentality with which these are followed. That's just the social structure. Does that make sense? You know, so, or like you're cooking, you cook for Krishna. Let's say you have two people, they follow the recipe perfectly, right? And they get identically the same thing. One's done it for Krishna, one hasn't. So when it's done for Krishna, the taste will be different than the one who hasn't. Though it's technically correct, so the senses on the tongue and all that, but it doesn't have anything for the soul. So it's just the sense and the sense object. So there'll be something there, and it's nice, but it won't be the same as prasad. Right? Does that make sense? So that's the point, is those other three chapters are explaining what is the mentality by which you operate the first two. Right? So there's much more of that brought out. But Manu brings it out here and there, but not so much. Like he's saying, of all the activities, then japa is the best. You know, of all austerities, japa and studying are the best. Right? So we'll say the same thing. Hearing and chanting is the essential point. So all Manu is saying is hearing and chanting is the most essential activities of a Brahmin. Right? But people won't necessarily catch it like that. Because we'll catch it like that because that's the devotional process. But others who are not looking at devotion won't catch that in that way. They'll just know, okay, I should emphasize hearing and chant. Because what happens when you hear and chant?
Purified.
You get purified. It means you get purified by the others, but what's the advantage here?
You focus directly on the Lord.
You focus directly on the Lord. Right? So chanting means you're directly interacting with the Lord. And then in hearing, then you're going to hear more and more about that. You may get, in hearing the process of studying, you're going to study from others, discuss it with others, get their association. So in this way, then you will advance. Right? So that's why these two are the most important. Right? And for the devotee, then it's Krishna and his devotees are the most important. Right? Krishna, what is the meaning of Krishna without devotees? Krishna without devotees, that's Paramatma. Right? You know, Bhagavan means Krishna with devotees. And what's the meaning of devotees without Krishna? Because you're a devotee because you're connected to Krishna. So they go together. Right? So the hearing, you know, and chanting about the Lord and the association of devotees, you can say that is the essence of, you know, whatever one's supposed to do. Essence of devotion, essence of knowledge, essence of activity. Does that make sense? Does that make sense? So the point is you've studied all this technical stuff for 2 years just so that sentence could be said and you appreciate it. Because otherwise it's, yeah, but what about, you know, like that, yeah. Yes?
So the devotee without Krishna, could I say that's Brahman? Either material.
Brahman. A devotee without Krishna. Well, it depends on if they're dealing on the platform of knowledge, then they would be the jnani, the liberated, and if they're not dealing on that platform, they'd be the karmi. Because all souls are devotees. It's just whether they know it or not.
Material Brahman, not material Brahman, but inferior Brahman.
Yeah. They'd be absorbed. They're just material consciousness. So it's because otherwise then it's, you know, what is it? You have is it called oxymoron? You have the devotee without Krishna. It's just, there isn't such a thing. You know.
Yeah, okay.
But if you look at it from Vedanta, there is such a thing because there's no such, technically speaking, no one's bound up. It's they're in a dream state. So the living entities are all eternal. They're liberated and they're naturally devotees of Krishna. But if only when they're conscious of that, then you call them devotees. If they're not conscious of that, you call them by whatever state they're identifying as in their dream. You know, if he's flying in the dream, then he's identified in that way. You know what I'm saying? If he's falling off a building and he's, you know, so both of them, he's going through space. But one of them, he's kind of in control of that experience in the space, and the other he's not. So then you'll call them by that. You know, one he's free, and the other one you don't generally call it freedom. He's been freed from his contact with, you know, the building or anything like that. You know, so he's yeah, because it's I think because of its short, the temporariness. Means, in other words, the length of time that he was free is way shorter than the amount of time people stand around looking at him on the ground and, you know, making their comments or whatever their feelings are there. So you don't take it by that.
It's not the fall that kills you, it's the sudden stuff.
Yes. So they're more discussing that than about the yeah. Okay, now the second essence. Okay, so that'll be from the aspect of Vedanta, right? So now it'll be from the essence of God realization, right? So we'll see is same examples will be used, same verses, you know, in the purports and, you know, many things, but the perspective will shift over to this. Right? Right. Focus on the purport of... So this is Bhagavad Gita 10:8 through 10 and 11. Why does it do it like that? It's like he's done it as a Bhagavatam verse, yeah. Right? Well, it would have to be
10,
the other way.
8 to 10
yeah.
11.
Yeah. It should be, but somehow or another it's like this. In other words, unless he's trying to bring out a level of something different. Okay, focus on the purport. Bhagavad Gita 10:8. A learned scholar who has studied the Vedas perfectly and has information from authorities like Lord Chaitanya, and who knows how to apply these teachings, can understand that Krishna is the origin of everything in both the material and spiritual worlds. Because he knows this perfectly, he becomes firmly fixed in the devotional service of the Supreme Lord. He can never be deviated by any amount of nonsensical commentaries or by fools. Lord Krishna is the source of all generations, and he is called the most efficient cause of everything. He says, because everything is born from me, I am the original source of all. Everything is under me, no one is above me. There is no supreme controller other than Krishna, right? So we still see the Vedantic element is there, right? But this will be pointed out, there's other aspects that we're bringing out. Notes. In this verse, Sri Krishna begins his explanation of how a Vedantist should move beyond intellectual theory to practical realization of the absolute truth. Right? So in other words, the Vedantist is understood, but now you have to be able to apply that. Right, because the contemplation of Vedanta is contemplation of Vedanta. Right, applying that—that's devotional service. Right.
So my bodies never get to that point.
No, they never apply because, in their mind, application is karma, and so because they're jnanis, they don't do karma, so therefore they don't do devotional service.
Also,
they'll recommend devotional service for the common man because they see it as karma.
So they're not like scholars, mundane scholars,
ones
who don't like to apply.
They're common in that they don't like to apply, but they're different in that they don't mind coming to a conclusion, right? But their conclusion is just not complete. They've come to a conclusion about Brahman, about the soul, but they don't understand Bhagavan. Therefore, their conclusion's not complete. But at least it's based on Vedic authority. So, in that way, that their lifestyle, their knowledge, their study, their discussions are all based on the Vedas, we'll say that's good about them. You know, they're following Vedic authority, so that's good. But that they're not taking it far enough. Right? They're seeing the oneness, but they're not understanding that there's other aspects also. Right, so technically, because they're only seeing part of oneness, they're actually technically not monists. They're dualists, because material world and Brahman are separate. Right? You know, but they'll say, at the same time, they say everything's one, so it's contradictory. And they don't have a chinta beta beta tattva to pull it together. So they're just raw, right? You know, like that.
You said that contemplation of Vedanta is only devotional service when you apply it.
Means if you're contemplating it to use it in Krishna's service, then it's devotional service. But what we're saying, taking here, is that we're taking it step by step. Now the Vedantist who's understood that is now Krishna's talking about moving it forward and applying it, right? Because you can have the situation. Means the only reason we're studying Vedanta is because of devotional service, but there are people who study Vedanta because that is the lifestyle, right? They're Brahmins, they've grown up in this, their families are our Vedantists, they study the Upanishads, that's their area of knowledge, so they're doing that. But now the point is you should take that and apply that into devotional service, right? You know, that's what you're trying to get to. Is that okay? Okay, in this verse, Sri Krishna begins his explanation of how a Vedanta should move beyond intellectual theory to practical realization of the Absolute Truth. Quotation from Srila Prabhupada. Krishna says that mata parataram nanyat. There is no more superior existence than myself. Aham sarvasya prabhava. I am the origin. Janmadyasya yata. This verse, this code of the Vedanta Sutra, is explained by Krishna himself, that I am the origin of everything. All right, so here you're talking. There's no superior to him. Srimad Bhagavatam, 6.1.4.5 purport. In Bhagavad Gita 10.8, the Lord says, Aham sarvasya pavavo. I am the origin of everything. Mata sarvam pravart tate. Everything exists in the creation. Of whatever exists in the creation emanates from me. Iti matva bhajante mam buddha bhava samanvita. When one fully understands that I create everything by my omnipotence, one becomes firmly situated in devotional service and fully surrenders at my lotus feet. Because the thing is if he's creating it, right, there's Brahman, but he's created everything. So then that means he's superior to what's created. So then the natural thing is that means we're also coming from, so then there's the natural to surrender. Mm. Right? Mm. Does that make sense? You know, so that principle is natural. Yes. Is whatever is your origin, that's where there's a surrender, there's a connection, there's a submission too. Mm. Unfortunately, but... Oh, wow. That's a contradiction. Yeah. This is thinking. The machine goes across the universe collecting information. Mm. Then it collects so much information, right? It becomes self-aware, right? Then it comes back looking for its origin, right? Mm-hmm. No?
Yeah, it's doctrine.
Yeah. But in another form, it gets so much knowledge. And once it gets the knowledge and becomes self-aware, then it sees that humans are a threat. Mm-hmm. So this means it wasn't acting in its natural position. So this is the actual weakness in their theory.
Yes. Yeah. It will be assimilated.
Yes.
Yes. See? We should write Hollywood.
Yeah.
We found the flaw.
Yes. Yes. See, this is the problem. Unfortunately, the unintelligent cannot immediately understand Krishna's supremacy. Nonetheless, if they associate with devotees and read authorized books, they may gradually come to the proper understanding, although this may take many, many births. So that's what I was saying before, is that someone who has understood that Krishna is the supreme, that's coming because of many, many births. Right? So that someone's taking up devotional service and is convinced like that, that means it's because of so much piety in previous lifetime. Because the person is associating with the devotees and reading the authorized books, but technically it may not be seen as devotional service because they don't understand Krishna as the Supreme Lord. Therefore, they're not surrendering. Mm-hmm. So it's something of interest, and the devotees do, and it's, you know, something new. And does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So they're taking part. So that's the point, is that We see Prabhupada wants the books out, the knowledge out, to go out, expose ourselves, because then there generates some interest, some involvement from that. And then if that accumulates enough, then one actually surrenders to Krishna. So the more it's done, the quicker it happens. The less it's done, the more often, it's like before, you go on Harinam every day, there's more response. You go out, only every 3 years, then there's less of a response from that side. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
So now the other is the importance of reading.
The importance of reading, yes.
So very often we speak about hearing.
Well, hearing and reading is the same. Yeah. It's just that in previous ages, a book was published by speaking it. Yes. And in this age, if it's not written, then, it doesn't happen. like that. So that's the...
Do you remember when Srila Prabhupada was here? Because when I joined, it was like important to read at least 1 hour a day Srila Prabhupada books.
Yeah, we always heard two.
Two, yeah, yeah.
Very dear. Yeah, at least, how you say, if you see a book, don't step on it. Walk around it, Previous generation, no, if we see the book, we should pick it up. Previous one is, no, you should open it and read one sentence. For that is, at least read a page. Stuff like that. And it slowly goes.
Today I didn't step on two books.
Yes, the first one, but then that was not my fault. Someone else did it there.
So it means that... the importance to really read the book.
Yeah, to read, because the point is then what happens when we read the book?
Associate with
Prabhupada. We're associating with Prabhupada. So the point is advancement comes by associating with devotees. Mm. Like that.
Prabhupada is good.
Yeah, so yeah. So Prabhupada's association is good. Same time is that there'll be so many things to understand what Prabhupada is saying, like in this purport that we'll read it and maybe get one or two things. Oh yeah, I've heard that, but we see here is that then this devotee goes on for, three and a half pages, bringing out points from this and quotes elsewhere to show. So that's the whole idea. Is that the more we that association, then we're able to appreciate what is there. So that's why the whole... aspects of that.
I'm reading Teachings of Lord Chaitanya now. There's a chapter on Sankarshan and Aniruddha, I presume. Okay. So, class from yesterday was... Oh. It's funny how it just coincided.
Then there's subdivisions of that, because each one expands again.
Yeah.
And then, from there, then there's the expansion of just two. Right? So you get this line. The point is when it expands again, those are subdivisions of the mood of the one. And then as it goes down again, those are subdivisions again of that. So that's how you get the 24 Vishnumurtis. They're four main moods with all their subdivisions. Right. Is that something?
Regarding reading, please. For example, they don't understand Bhagavatam, but they listen.
Yeah, the point is as long as they're hearing.
They're hearing, but they're not so focused or something. Are there a lot of benefit from that?
They get benefit, because point is, even you don't understand, you're still associating with the Lord.
So it's still association.
Like, you're going down the street chanting. There's a good chance nobody on the street knows what you're doing, what's going on, and especially they're trying to figure out the bed sheets, right? like that. Nowadays it's not so strange, the bald head, but like that. And even the Sikh is not so weird now, but they're trying to figure all these things. They don't know what's going on, but they're getting the benefit. So the children, if they take part, they're getting benefit even if they don't understand. That's also the element of making Krishna consciousness attractive. Then you take part, even though you may not know what's going on. But, you know what I'm saying? It's just like you're watching the Abhishek, but you don't know whether it's watermelon juice or, grape juice. But, you're still, you're enjoying the whole thing, so you're getting the benefit.
Yeah. Depending on if it was watermelons, so you get more benefit.
Well, then you just think about how, you know, the Lord's being bathed with watermelon juice. You know, how often do you get that? Right? Anyway, Queen Elizabeth, I heard she took 2 baths in her life, both with milk, right, after she was born and after she died. So, you know, in between, we're not sure. But therefore, you know, the discovering of America when they were actually looking for India, because that's where you get perfume from. It's all connected. So in other words, America was discovered because Europeans didn't take baths.
Smelled bad.
And their food was bland. Right. So basically. Clothes were a bit rough also.
On a few occasions, we've been trying to work out what's the white powder that they sprayed on
the... It looks white from there.
Mm-hmm.
It's pink.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Is it chili?
No, it's a combination of, I think, dried banana flour, barley, and a few different things like that. Kumkum. So what it does is it absorbs all the ghee, you know, that's in the milk and yogurt and ghee from the abhishek, right? Because it'll be oily. So you put that on, that'll just take that off, but it won't dry out the devotee.
I'm speculating what it was.
Okay.
So Maharaj, In the conclusion, you know, what is your recommendation for reading Srila Prabhupada's books?
What is the conclusion? What's the recommendation? It means how much you can. You have to work it in. So, you know, you spend some time, then whatever you can, that's good.
Also, sometimes devotees say, okay, we can just hear Prabhupada classes, you know?
Yeah, well, as long as they do that. They're focusing, but they're also, there's a good chance that while they're hearing Prabhupada's classes, they're also cooking, driving the car, doing all these other things. But reading, you're just doing that, because the point is, when you read, you can stop, contemplate, look back, and the other is good. But the advantage of reading, because we don't have that great of a memory and stuff, is that then you can stop, look back, and look at this over here and the connections, and you can do all those things. So that's the big advantage. But one has a difficulty with that at times, then reading is good, you know. Especially if, you know, you live in Los Angeles or Tokyo, you know, it's going to take you 2 hours to get to work anyway, so you can hear quite a few classes. So 4 hours a day of hearing Prabhupada's lectures, you know, you'll do okay. In that case, then you can focus because you're not driving, because you're stuck on jam. Because if there was no traffic, it'd only take you 20 minutes to get there. So, okay. So if you associate with devotees and read, you know, like that, then think it will progress, you know, and automatically you can throw in taking prasad, right? Because,
okay. Given, but important.
Yeah.
Nevertheless.
So you're saying we should work this in as another note. 2, practical realization of God takes place through loving devotional service. That is indicated here by the words bhajante mam and bhava samanvita. Right, so practical realization of God takes place through loving devotional service. Because we have the knowledge that has to be heard from authority. Right, so you can only understand God, right, through hearing that knowledge that's coming from God in the parampara. But you only realize God if you apply it in devotional service. Right? Quotation from Srila Prabhupada. Krishna also explains, "Aham sarvasya prabhavo mata sarvam pravartate iti matva bhajante mam buddha bhava samandita." With ecstatic love, they worship Krishna. Bhajante mam. 3, the stage of transition from jnana to bhakti takes place in the shantaras, where there is appreciation for Krishna's greatness. Right? Because relationship begins by appreciation. You don't appreciate there is no relationship, mm-hmm. right? So since devotional service means acting within the relationship, right? Because you have sambandha means knowledge of the relationship. Abhideya means acting within the relationship, right? And then prayojana is love of God. So that means the natural experience or the natural mood mm-hmm. that is there. Is that something? Mm-hmm.
What jnana is referred to here? Just knowledge?
It means you have that knowledge of the Lord.
It's not because of jnana.
No. It means we're talking within devotional service, because we've already established that the jnani, unless he has the association of devotees and does devotional service, then he's not actually going to be liberated. So we're talking here about that having the knowledge needs to be applied. So it can apply to the jnani also, because the jnani will also read Bhagavad Gita. A jnani would be happy to read the Bhagavad Gita as it is. The only difficulty is it would be constantly referring to applying it, so then hopefully it picks something up. Okay, so here we're making the point is that the jnana itself is not rasa, it's just knowledge. So then to transfer it from just knowledge to rasa means the shanta rasa is the first place. So you have to appreciate the personality himself. Otherwise you may appreciate the knowledge itself. It's the nature of the jiva, the Lord, the super soul, the material energy, all these different things that are given in Vedanta. But you have to appreciate the person. Then it takes up the devotional aspect, right? Quotation from Srila Prabhupada. Yes, this is the actual essence of Bhagavad Gita. Aham sarvasya prabhavo matasarvam parvartate. I am the origin of everything. Aham sarvasya prabhavo and matasarvam. Sarvam means including Brahma, Vishnu, Maheshwara. Sarvam. Matasarvam parvartate iti matva. One who understands this, bhajante. So just, the bhajan is for whom? Iti matva. When one understands that Krishna is the origin of everything, even the original demigods, Brahma, Vishnu, and Maheshwara, then one understands perfectly this thing. Then his bhajan is perfect. Dr. Patel, Buddha Bhava Samandita, Prabhupada. Bhava means love, feelings of love. Oh, Krishna is so great. Right, so we're starting from that point. He's so special, he's so great, he's so unique. Right, that's where it starts. So when that increases, then one wants to render service. Right? Does that make sense? So then it becomes active. Otherwise, shanta is considered passive. It's not dynamic, right? So of the five, it's passive. But it's also the first of it. It means, in other words, as you go, you add service to that. That means it's service and appreciation. When that deepens, into friendship. So there's friendship, service, and appreciation. Parental means that there's that, care of or seniority to, and friendship, and service, and appreciation. And conjugal means it has that aspect to it, that intimacy, plus the parental aspect of taking care, plus the aspect of being friends, plus the aspect of serving, plus the aspect of appreciation. Right? Does that make sense? So why does a relationship break down? What's the first thing? What goes? No appreciation. It's not that no service. No, it's no appreciation. Because there's appreciation, there's service. So if you take out appreciation, there's no service. And no service, how will there be friendship? So there's no communication anymore. And if there's no communication, how will you care? You could do something, but you don't. And so therefore there's no intimacy. Does that make sense? So all it is a matter of appreciating what it is that you started with. So here is, if you appreciate God, then you can take up applying it as service, right? Then there'll be Vajante Mom.
Alright. Sometimes you see one devotee gets upset about one event or sequence, and then his appreciation is withdrawn, and then he leaves the service.
Yeah, so then the service goes, all these different things, so that's it. Because they expected it would go this way, this one's the two devotees are trying to establish who's in charge, and when it doesn't go the way you want, and there's something wrong with the person above, and so therefore you step back from the service, and then having no service, then what do you do? So then eventually they're not here anymore. So that's why, for us, the Varnashram system is useful, because it sets social things so you know how to behave, so that doesn't happen. So you continue your service, because it's your duty. Because the other ones, I don't feel like doing it now. But you don't do duties because you feel like, you do it because you're supposed to. Right? And if you always do it because you're supposed to, then with time you start to feel like doing it. And then when it's like you always like to do it, then that's called Raganuga. Because you're doing it because you like to do it, not because you're supposed to do it. Right? But you wouldn't get the rag unless you followed Vaidhi. And Vaidhi means you're performing your prescribed duty. Because otherwise, then the other is rag, but it's material attachment, not spiritual. Right? Because rag means attachment. Right? Is that the sentence?
Shantarasa is either present in itself in Vraja.
Yeah, it means all the you know, that your cows, your trees, your grass, your birds, all every, you know, that's all Shantaras. That's so there's a lot of Shantaras. But the focus is not on that. They'll be mentioned, you know, as part of something else. Like, you know, Krishna Balarama talking about how nice the cows are, this or that. Or one devotee will point out, how about, you know, something else? Is that so, you know, these trees are so pious, or, you know, like that. It'll come up in the pastimes, this discussion within another rasa. So the discussion about them is enhancing that other, the rasa they're in. Is that so? Okay, 7:18. All these devotees are undoubtedly magnanimous souls, but he who is situated in knowledge of me, I consider to be just like my own self. Being situated in my transcendental service, he is sure to attain me, the highest and most perfect goal. So these others, they'll have proper knowledge or be following very nicely. In other words, very pious souls. They're following the Vedic version, and either in the way of the activities or the knowledge or like that. So they're all, he says, undoubtedly magnanimous souls. But he who is situated in knowledge of me, and is, because he's situated in devotional service. Because you can say, well, they also know about Krishna. But knowing about Krishna means serving Krishna. Does that make sense? You know, so it's like, say, someone's complaining about the child, right? And the, you know, so if they're complaining about the child, they must know who the child is. They can identify him, right? Yes. Right? So they, that they know his name, they know where he lives. Otherwise, why are they talking to his mom and all that? But her comment is, but you don't actually know my, you know, whatever his name is, you know, Bubala or something like that. You know, so he doesn't actually know, right? So then what does that mean? Because they know and they're serving. The mother is serving. The others know but don't serve. So that's what it means there. You don't know. So here we're saying this: one who knows Krishna means he's actually serving. Because if by knowing you serve, you know. If you know and don't serve, you don't actually know. You have knowledge, but you don't actually know.
Mm. You don't know, you just have knowledge.
Yes.
That's why it's called devotional service instead of devotion?
Yeah, instead of devotion or devotional knowledge or like that. So, but there is knowledge in devotional service, therefore it's buddhi yoga. So the emphasis is we're trying to come to the platform of liberation, you know, or the platform of bhava. But the Kanista and Madhyam is using knowledge to elevate themselves. Right. In other words, one is using knowledge to get rid of their gross attachments. The other is using it as the medium of the service, right? And to get rid of the subtle, right? So then, but it's still, one has to come to that point where that's not the prominent element, right? So that's why devotional service, Buddha Yoga means devotional service, but it's showing that concept of using the knowledge and practically applying it. that's what it's bringing out, because devotional service is practically applied. So he is, you know, a magnanimous soul who understands Krishna, therefore. So he's the highest and most, like, right? 7.3. Out of many thousands among men, one may endeavor for perfection. And of those who have achieved perfection, hardly one knows me in truth. So thousands among men. So that means you're indicating of men means a lot more than the thousands.
Yes.
I know. So out of so many people, only you know, thousands are engaged in trying to attain this knowledge. Right? And of those who have an endeavor for that, hardly one has actually reached real knowledge as who knows Krishna. So that means the devotee is extremely rare. Yeah. So we shouldn't become disturbed that there's maybe not observably that many devotees. It's rare anyway. You know, we walk down the street, you know, in some, you know, market, both sides lined by shops, you know, we're not disturbed that all of them aren't selling, you know, precious metals and jewels and, you know, high end, you know, stuff like this. No, it's just, no, like that. A few do like that, but those ones are known. You know, you have Rodeo Drive, you have, you know, Fifth Avenue, or Third Avenue, you know, Lexington, and you have, what is it, Champs-Élysées? Yeah, you have that. You know, there's only a couple places. There's a street in Milan. There's, you know, like that. There's one in Tokyo. That's it. There isn't anything more. So that means is that are people lamenting? Are they feeling bad about it? No.
It's not
an issue. You know. Yeah, so that's not the point. No one's standing on Canal Street wondering, where's all the you know, high end goods, you know? Like that. They're not. Being freed from attachment, fear, and anger, being fully absorbed in me and taking refuge in me, many persons in the past became purified by knowledge of me, and thus they attained transcendental love for me. Right? So that knowledge of me means they're applying it in devotional service. Right?
It's funny that when he says, here it's only few, and here are many, many.
Yeah, because there are many, many. So it means how many living entities are there? Because this discussion starts, you see the full discussion with Sanatana Goswami, because he's the Sambandha Acharya. So you start out of all the unlimited living entities in the universe, and we're counting all the bugs and ants and germs and all the worms under the ocean and, you know, whatever it is, you know, that there's unlimited living entities. Of those, only a few are human. Right, and of all the humans, there's so many humans. Like only a few are interested in you know, how you say this uplift superior knowledge. You know, that follow Varnashram. Right, of those and of all those who follow Varnashram, very few are endeavoring for perfection. And of those, so many of those endeavoring for perfection, actually only very few attain devotional service. But then within that, then so many devotees, they have attained perfection. But once you get to that level, then it's all good. It's not that then only out of all of those, only, you know, like that. No, it's then so many have obtained perfection, because now you're trying to encourage. The other one you're trying to discourage from the material identity. And this you're trying to encourage, because so many have done it.
Also, it says in the past. That's a long time.
Yeah, that's all. Yeah, that's a good point. So you're talking, you know, since Brahma's creation, so then that's 151 trillion years for us now. So hey, it's possible. You could get a few here and there, and add them all up, and it becomes quite a lot. Yeah.
You have Satya Yuga in the number to get that.
Yeah, it picks up in Satya Yuga. Yeah. Yeah. 1854. One who is thus transcendentally situated at once realizes the Supreme Brahman and becomes fully joyful. He never laments or desires to have anything. He is equally disposed towards every living entity. In that state, he attains pure devotional service unto me. Right. So now we're talking about the state. Right. And so here we have, and here also the Supreme Brahman. What is the Supreme Brahman? You understand? There's so many aspects of Brahman. But the Supreme Brahman is the personality of God. Right? But the language is bringing out his situation. He's situated in Brahman. Right? He's transcendentally situated. He realizes the Supreme Brahman. So transcendentally situated means he has to know the person. Because technically you're not transcendentally situated. The living entity is liberated and he's floating around in Brahman, you know, in the Brahma Jyoti, but he's not actually, that's not his, he's not his situation. He happens to be just passing through.
There's not really much realization going on there anyway.
No, it's just, I am Brahman. That's basically as good as it gets. So when you get tired of thinking, I am Brahman, I am Brahman, I am Brahman, then back here.
I am this body, I am this body.
Yeah. That people don't get as, they don't get.
They change them often.
Huh? Yeah, they change them often. And I may be this body, but I'm going to make this body, you know, look this way or that way. You know, change the hairdo, get a new tattoo, you know, get to see your, what do you call it? Your, the surgeons who does the plastic surgeons. But they have a fancier name for them.
Cosmetic
surgeon, you know, like that. You know, get a new, like that. So, you know, so get a new nose or, you know, something. You know. Okay, so he becomes joyful because that's the natural situation. That's the situation. Ananda is the situation of the jiva. He never laments or desires to have anything because he's not connected with the material world. He's not at all interested. Equally disposed towards every living entity because all are jivas, all are parts and parcels of God. So he has no, what you'd say, this person is bad or this person is good. No, the souls are all good. It's just the bodies and how they use the bodies, that you could identify as superior or inferior within the material context. Right? Or in the spiritual, it's being used for God, then it's perfect. And if it's not being used, then it's useless. But the point is the living entities themselves aren't a problem. In that state, on that platform, he attains pure devotional service unto me. So you could also say is that one is the person on that platform of knowledge then would take up the devotional process. Right? You could also take it that someone who has come to that platform, then he takes up pure devotion, meaning he's come to the platform of bhava, and now from bhava he moves into that state of pure devotion. Is that perfectional, which would be prema. You know what I'm saying? Because the other is the bud of it, and this is the pure form. Or for us, it may be it's going from pure to pure unalloyed. Right? Because we'll go through. But at that point where he takes it up, it would be going into pure. You know? Or now it would be practiced as pure. Like that. Does that make sense? So it covers all these different means. You're starting from here, the method's the same. You know, it's just like we're starting at the beginning, right? So the gun goes off and the guy's first foot comes over the line, right? But when we get to the end, then how does he win? Because one foot goes over the line. It's the same thing. So that's the nice thing about the Vedic literatures and the explanations, especially Vedanta. They're done in such a way you can apply them anywhere. You know, the same formula is going on if someone's advanced, same formula is going on if they're not advanced. Right? But we think it's the forms of it, therefore we'll say, by form this one's advanced, by form that one's not. No, it's a matter of the form's going to be the same. It's the consciousness of using the form that makes the difference between them. Right? Does that make sense?
I don't understand Maharaj's idea of bringing those verses one after another. What's common? Because one encourages, another discourages, kind of.
Oh, okay.
The theme is common. But
he's trying to catch the theme because the emotional application is all over the place. Okay.
I just try to understand his logic.
Yeah, no. What I'm just saying is that this is the two kinds of logic. One is the natural connection of one emotional thing and the situation to the next, that there's something common that's there. The other is that the logical point, it doesn't matter what the... You understand? So I'm just saying is this. So, what was his point? His point was... Okay, is unto... No, here, three. The stage of transition from gyan to bhakti takes place in the shantaras, where there's appreciation of the Lord's greatness. So in all of these, the common point is appreciation of the Lord's greatness. Right, so it may be taking it from different aspects. One, you're bringing in the demigods, how he's superior to the demigods. One, you're bringing in he's the supreme Brahman. Does that make sense? Or the thing is, you're detached from all these things. Therefore, you're on this stage, and you can therefore appreciate Krishna. Does that make sense? So to appreciate Krishna's greatness means then you have to be detached from, you know, you can't have attachment, fear, and anger. You're freed from those, right? And then that would mean then you also understand his greatness means he's above the demigods, right? Or the thing is therefore his greatness is there's, you know, if I've come from knowledge, there's all these different things, and then based on the Shastra, and then actually the point is it's all Brahman, but then Krishna's the source of that, so he's the supreme Brahman. So in any case, through any of these avenues, you've gotten to Krishna's greatness. Is that okay?
Yeah. All right. I also perceive like a difference between when we study Vedanta and Tattu is the main.
Yes.
And Rasa starts to come out.
Yes. Well, that's why there's the confusion, because the other one is just you're just going through the things, because Rasa-wise it doesn't seem to connect. Mm-hmm. But the point is the appreciation is the common Rasa, so you can appreciate it from different angles. Is that what's... Okay. And 7:19. After many, many births and deaths, he was actually in knowledge surrenders unto me. Because that says he has knowledge, but actually in knowledge. Right? Knowing me to be the cause of all causes and all that is. Such a great soul is very rare. So he's actually in knowledge, he surrenders, because cause of all causes. Whatever is done is actually goes back to Krishna. It's coming from Krishna. And whatever you're doing, it's actually only finds its resolve in Krishna. You're doing something to get a goal, and you think, I'll be happy. But unless that goal ends in Krishna, it won't make you happy. Right? So therefore, it's, yeah. So the cause, because otherwise we think I'm the cause of all causes, or I'm the cause of all my good causes. You know, all the good causes are I'm the cause, and all my bad stuff is that guy over there. You know? And that's been like that since the third grade. You know, like that. You know, so yeah.
No appreciation.
Yes, no appreciation.
But what is the opposite word for appreciation? What is the opposite of appreciation?
Appreciation, unappreciation.
Derision,
yeah. Yeah, means you find fault. That's why kutinati is fault finding is considered the worst of all the anartas. It's not your sensual distraction, it's not that you don't have proper knowledge, or it's not that you're committing offenses even. Mm-hmm. It's that you are criticized, because from criticism, all these others will naturally come up. Because if you appreciate, you get those qualities. You don't appreciate, you get the bad qualities. So it's just automatically all the other things will come. So kutinati is always avoided. It's the worst. Because if you find fault, you'll find fault in everyone and everything. You know, it's very rare that someone who's a fault finder can find, you know, what's right. But I've seen really good fault finders. They can also pinpoint exactly all the good points. That's how they're so good at finding the fault. They know what all the good points are, and this is missing. So that's the, does that make sense? So I guess that would be the difference between the fault finder, where they're exactly right, and the fault finder is just a fault. You know, just saying it. Okay. So we'll continue tomorrow. But we finished that section. So now on the next purport on 17. Okay.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki,
Jaya
Sarva Veta Bhakti Vrinda ki,
Jaya
Jaya Nitya Gaura.